Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back into the show. Today, we are saluting some of my favorite Chiefs content creators on this wonderful, wonderful Monday. Right now, let's head to the phone lines to be joined by Darrell Wakefield. He is one of the hosts of Kingdom Cast. Be sure to check out their podcast, Chiefs fans. Be sure to check out Kingdom Cast. D-Mac, how you doing today, my man?
I'm doing good, C-Dot. How you doing, man?
Doing fantastic, man. Let me start with this. I want to get your thoughts on if you are a believer or not a believer on a couple of teams. Let's start with the New England Patriots. Are you a believer or a non-believer when it comes to the Pats?
I am a believer that Drake May is going to continue to be one of the best quarterbacks in the National Football League moving forward, but I'm not a believer in them as far as the Super Bowl run is concerned because I just think that their defense has too many holes right now.
All right, I'll ask you that same question about the Indianapolis Colts.
Colts have a really good team on both sides of the ball. I mean, when you can run the ball that they can and the way that they can control the game, really it's just about do you keep away from the Daniel Jones disaster plays. That's really what the big thing is. We've seen over the last 2 weeks with the turnovers, he was a little loose with the ball. If he doesn't have those disaster plays, then they're going to be a tough out because of what Lou can put together on the defensive coordinator spot, what he added to their back end, obviously, with Sauce Gardner, and the fact that hopefully they'll get DeForest Buckner back later in the year, and they can do on the defensive side of the ball in addition to Jonathan Taylor just running roughshod over the National Football League.
The one thing I'll push back on just a little bit, if you say if Daniel Jones can avoid those danger plays, that's what makes him Daniel Jones with those plays.
It sure does. You're not lying. I completely understand it. I'll be honest with you. I thought that they've been an incredibly complete team on both sides of the ball. But, boy, them last two games and the fact that he has had gotten that loose with the football in a way in which they should not have, it did start to scare me. I saw that look in his eye. That was a little bit concerning.
Last team, the Broncos.
I am not a believer in the Broncos. I do not believe that you can continue to skate by with the offensive issues that they have. They are one of the worst teams in the National Football League as far as offensive DVOA and EPA per play whenever you look at it. Their run game isn't dominant enough to be able to secure that. Now, look, their defense is very good. It is almost the level of, I would say, a Texans defense that you can almost throw a game plan out there that could take out anybody at any given time, and that may allow them to get a deep enough playoff run to get to an AFC Championship game. I don't think you can put that together for multiple games to get to the Super Bowl.
All right, don't come on here now trying to throw out all these acronyms and all these football terms that don't nobody know what we're talking about. All right, let's skate with that because you obviously, you guys do a great job on Kingdom Cast, kind of deep diving and going through the film. What are you seeing from this defensive line? Because to me, if you are looking at where I think improvement needs to happen most with the Chiefs over the bye week, it needs to happen on their defensive line. The amount of resources that you have spent based on what you are getting is a drastic difference. I thought Charles Domenihu was going to have a much better season, and I don't think we spent enough time talking about it in the offseason, the effect of losing Tershawn Wharton, because we all thought that they could just easily replace those numbers. I don't think they've replaced it, and I think it's had a bigger ripple effect than people want to acknowledge.
I'm really glad that you brought up the resources that they've put into this, because I think that's where you have to start with this. Obviously, the Felix Anduke-Uzomah pick and other maybe circumstances that surrounded that pick went into it. I think that he was a good prospect, a prospect that should have had a greater return, but the way that they handled his development, maybe not the way that I would have loved the way that they were able to develop him specifically from a speed edge rusher standpoint to complement what they already had in Karlaftis. Then you go to this past draft. I was extremely excited about the Omar Norman Lott pick because he was an interior disruptor, the way in which he could quickly penetrate. I thought that he would be a really nice pairing with Chris Jones. Then I was concerned about the weight gain talked about because they wanted to have him more play on three downs. He was a rotational player at Tennessee. Allow him to do what he did best there in college, I think that they may have put him in a little bit of a difficult position, obviously with the injuries during training camp and then the unfortunate ACL tear, to where that got taken away. So that's a first and a second round investment of the last few years that's been taken away from you. You mentioned Tershawn Wharton, who was a very underrated piece of this defense the last few years, A, being in a rotational role and then being their full-time role really last year. And now you look at what this defense is left with. Because Charles Omeniu has never gotten back from that ACL injury, it's a lot of guys that play Spags type of edge don't actually get after the passer the way that they need them to. So Chris Jones, who normally is obviously elite top five defensive player, has not necessarily been to that level while still being very good and obviously demanding a lot of attention. You take a little bit of step back there. Karloftis has been solid, even very good at times, but still not necessarily a dominant one-on-one edge rusher. Now, all of a sudden, you're looking at a whole bunch of role players next to guys that weren't as elite or as good as they had been in the past. And now you're looking at a defensive line that can't get after the passer. Your best hope for improvement, in my personal opinion, is to find a Charles Omeniu to come back over the second half of the season that looks like his old self. Or you have to make a call and see if Christian Williams' foot is healthy. Because otherwise, I think that this defensive line is going to continue to be an issue over the back half. It's going to put the offense in a position in which it's got to put up 30 if they want to advance in the playoffs.
Right now, we're talking to Darrell Wakefield. He is with Kingdom Cast, one of my favorite Chiefs podcasts. We're having different content creators come on kind of to recap the bye week. Let's move to the offensive side of the ball. I understand that he has not been a dynamic RB1, but when you're going up against a defense like the Broncos have, I think they need Isaiah Pacheco's 10 to 12 carries just for the balance of it. I think they really need him heading into this game. We've talked about the run game a lot on this show. Where do you kind of sit with this run game? I guess the second part of this question is, I think this offense needs to focus on trying to get more out of Bashard Smith. He has 28 carries so far this season. 14 of them came in the Raiders game, which doesn't really count a whole lot. I don't see a lot of growth in this offense from the run game perspective if it doesn't center around Bashard Smith just being better in the second half of the season and then just using him more in the second half.
I'm glad that you mentioned the both sides of it as far as Pacheco being healthy and then also development of Bashard Smith. The way I'm looking at this running back room, and obviously this became a very large topic of conversation over the last few days, obviously with the Breece Hall possible trade that didn't end up going through, is, hey, what is this run game doing and is it going to be able to be better here? The reality situation for me, this offensive line, Kingsley Suamadia, obviously with Josh Simmons when it's in there, what you have in Creed and Trey, of course, and Juwan Taylor, they can move people. You just have to commit to it from the standpoint of running the ball with a lot of power and gap schemes that really allows them to move forward on a consistent basis. If you commit to that aspect of it, then I think you're going to see the floor of this run game that for a nice little stretch there, once Xavier Worthy got back in week three, really up until last week versus the Bills, in which they decided to abandon every single thing that I thought they did well from a game plan perspective, they were a solid run game, and that involved a healthy Isaiah Pacheco, to your point, having those 10 to 12 carries that were nice. Kareem Hunt being one of the most valuable short yardage running backs in football, to say the least, in the way that he can convert. And then Bashard Smith, like you spoke to, having that receiving element that is really nice to either do screens or be able to move as far as the way that Andy Reid likes to scheme those things up. So when those three backs are there in rotation, I think they work very well together. And specifically, when you're talking about this matchup versus the Broncos, you cannot be one-dimensional. Their defensive line is too good. They are too comfortable with the ways in which they can scheme the back end. You have to be able to attack them on the ground and be able to stay balanced and ahead of the sticks so that you can create explosive plays over the top. And so if they can't do that, that is going to make their job 100 times harder. So, yes, I completely agree with you. You got to commit there. I would like to see more from Bashard Smith, but he's still a guy that's so young and so transitioning from his limited time at SMU in which he ran the ball well. I think there's more to him, certainly. I'm not going to say he's a gadget player for the rest of his career, but I'm not sure he's got more than that to give as far as his rookie season.
Let me ask you this. Who do you think has a better chance of getting out of the doghouse? Is it Christian Fulton or Elijah Mitchell?
Oh, God. I think that they've kept Christian Fulton just in case for a death piece, but we now have the answer to, hey, if something bad goes wrong in the running back room, are you going to bring up Elijah Mitchell? The answer is no. Anytime that you're activating CEH in 2025 means that you're not going to believe in whoever you want to bring into the running back room. That's just the reality of the situation. They said, obviously, that Elijah Mitchell's healthy. Andrew Reid continues to say that he likes him. I'm sorry, the time to bring him up would have been against the Bills. The fact that you activated CEH tells me everything I need to know. Christian Fulton could provide some depth down the stretch if something bad does happen in the quarterback room. I've got no hope, I should say, for Elijah Mitchell doing so.
Last couple of things here. How confident are you about the Chiefs heading into Sunday's matchup? My big point this week is going to be this. We have never seen the Chiefs lose this game. If you were telling the Chiefs over the last 8 years in the Mahomes era, they got to have this game, they have won this game 99% of the time. So I'm going into it with that. And just everything lines up. Chiefs off a bye week. Hearing this for the last 2 weeks, like, I expect to see a sharp, very focused version of the Chiefs. Where are you at heading into this matchup, which is the most important game of the season?
Yeah, look, I think that this is one of, if not the most important regular season games of the Mahomes era for the exact reason. They need this, in my personal opinion, to stay alive in the AFC West. So in that aspect, you can't go 3.5 games back to the Denver Broncos and then also having a lesser tiebreaker against so many other teams and especially them. So as far as my confidence level, this is going to have to be an offensive-led game. The reality situation is they're going to probably put up 20 points, and I know they just had that awful game versus the Raiders. I'm sorry, I've seen what this defense can make other terrible offenses look like at times, so we'll see from that perspective. But 60% would be my confidence level as far as them going into Denver, but I still feel like coming out of the bye week, like you said, the trust that this team has earned, A, out of the bye week in general, would just be when they have to have these games. I think they'll come out with the proper game plan needed, find that balance on offense that'll lead this team. And I think Mahomes, who has played very well up into that Bills game, will not repeat some of the mistakes that he had in that Buffalo game to be able to pull this out on the road and stay alive in the division.
That is Darrell Wakefield joining us on the show. He's with the Kingdom Cast podcast. Be sure to download it wherever you get your podcast from. D-Mac, I appreciate you, man.
Absolutely. Always good to talk to you, man.
Absolutely, man. That is Darrell Wakefield joining us on the show. Rob, I wanted to talk about very serious Kansas basketball things. I know you guys played North Carolina, and I mean, I guess you're both blue bloods, but if we're going to have a blue blood conversation, it has to include the best restaurant that America has to offer. Now, I've been telling you guys about this place for quite some time now, and I've been telling you about how they're turning things around financially. Yes, America tried to abandon Red Lobster a couple of years ago, but they hired a young CEO with vision, with drive, with ambition, and we have turned this ship around. Now, Rob, do you remember that they had those little seafood boil bags? You remember this, right? They had the little seafood boil bags. Go in there, get you some Cheddar Bay biscuits, get you a little seafood boil, and have a time. Well, I'm here to tell you that, Rob, they are announcing some new flavors over at Red Lobster.
Red Lobster CEO, all the love for our seafood boils inspired us to drop two new flavors.
Try our zesty new lemon pepper or combine all flavors for one unforgettable experience.
Real change, real happiness, Red Lobster.
Oh, my goodness. Rob, you telling me they got lemon pepper shrimp over at Red Lobster? Hey, what are you and your wife doing today? Meal on me. I'm treating today. What do they got going on over there at Red Lobster? This is one of the most inspirational stories that we have ever seen. This is basically the theme, the plot of Rocky. An underdog who nobody believed in, who turned out to be the heavyweight champion of the world. Rob, you're telling me that they already got the Cheddar Bay biscuits. Melt in your mouth. They already got the great drinks. You were telling me they got lemon pepper seafood boils down there at Red Lobster? I'm going there tonight. Lord knows I can't watch Monday Night Football. I know they got Monday Night Football at Red Lobster. They got to have it on there. Oh, my goodness. And you guys have the ability to fix your thumbs, to text in bad things about Red Lobster when they're changing the game? I know you got something negative to say, Rob. I know you do. That's all you got is negative things to say. Don't worry. We'll talk about your basketball team coming up in a bit. But you better not say nothing negative about Red Lobster.
I actually think the lemon pepper seafood boil is an interesting and good idea.
Interesting. It's the best idea I've heard in 2025.
I don't know how lemon pepper goes with seafood. Like, I'm intrigued by it. I will say their other new flavor is just all the flavors. All the flavors is not a flavor.
And we're going to take all the seasonings.
Yeah. If you and me like went to go get lunch and I was like, hey, man, can you grab me a drink from the machine? You said, yeah. And you came back. You're like, hey, I got you a splash of everything. I wouldn't have been like, ooh, new flavor alert. That's not a flavor. Everything is not a flavor.
I will say this about Red Lobster. They know their target audience. Hey, we're trying to think of new flavors. Lemon pepper. Brilliant. That's all they had. They had one idea. They had one idea for a new flavor.
No, the other idea was, hey, everything spilled. Well, hold on. What if we just call that a super flavor? Some of those flavors can't match. Like, do you really want Cajun and lemon pepper and all the other seafood seasoning? Old Bay all-in-one super boil? That feels like a mistake.
What do they say in the South? If I ain't sneezing, then it ain't seasoned. That's what they're trying to do over at Red Lobster. We can move on. It's my responsibility. It's in my contract. When Red Lobster has new information, I have to share it with you. I have to. It's my responsibility to share it with you. All right, Rob. Do you want me to talk about KU seriously or get jokes off?
Because get your jokes off first.
Okay,
let's get them out of your system, and then we can talk about
Kansas
the basketball team.
Kansas is 15-14 in their last 29 games. They're 15-14. You guys are Boston College with tradition in basketball for the last 30 games. You guys are Rutgers with the rules is what you are. Is this supposed to be the mecca of basketball? This is the best program in college basketball. You're a 500 team over the last 30 games? Could never. All right. I got that out of my system. I've been holding that one. I really have. I've been holding that one. You guys already lost the college basketball game. We ain't even really got the season going. You already got a loss? I don't know how you support them. Okay. Now, this is serious. I'm not joking. How many good players do you think KU has? And the only reason I ask that is, if we randomly just go back, and let's say you tell me to pick a year, 2011, and I look at the 2011 roster, I mean, you had 3, 4, 5 NBA guys. I mean, there was a time Thomas Robinson was coming off the bench at KU. Your 6th, 7th, 8th man off the bench was a future McDonald's All-American top player in the country. From what I've seen from KU so far this season, they got 3 good players. They have one possibly transcendent player. Flory is good, and I like the Bryson Tiller kid. I don't love his game yet, but I like him. Watching KU just not be able to just beat you over the head with talent is different for me. It's different for everybody, I think. I remember KU fans used to kind of walk around and would say, hey, your best player wouldn't even start at Kansas. Your best player couldn't see the rotation, couldn't see minutes at KU. That's not the KU that I'm watching right now. Now, they got a lot of young talent, and they have a lot of new guys that we'll see how they'll gel to play together. But this team is centered around Flory being one of the best bigs in the country, which I think he has a chance to be. Darren Peterson being a guy that can average somewhere between 18 to 25. And to me, it's going to be a struggle to find out on a night-by-night basis who you can trust offensively and who's going to be able to consistently get stops for this KU team. That is my early impression watching the Jayhawks.
So to answer your question, I agree. I think KU has 3 good players. I also think it's the second real game of the season. I think there is a thought that a couple of these guys that me and you don't have in the good category can elevate to maybe productive is a level they can elevate to, maybe, you know, good in spots, role players, but they're not right now. Cole Rosario was a kid that was, he moved up a level in high school sports. He was a top 15 recruit for this year. He moved up a level. He looked overmatched at times. Do I think one day this season he might figure it out? Maybe. El Marco Jackson's coming off an injury. He was a guy who I believe was a top 25, top 30 recruit in his recruiting class. He's battled injury. Is he a good player right now? No. Do I think he could be? Yes. But to your point about back in the day, Kansas used to have their 9th guy was better than some team's front line guy. Isn't that just how college basketball has changed in general? The talent is more spaced out than ever before. Because even if you pick another blue blood, let's pick Duke, for example. Duke had the same situation. There were times when that Austin Rivers team were like Duke's 8th guy would be like the best player on K-State or some other teams, Missouri locally. That's not the case with Duke anymore. That's not the case with a lot of teams. I think NIL has made it so building a super team, it's just not really feasible. You can just collect only so much talent and your depth gets tested. So yes, it's affecting Kansas. Their 8th best guy, their 7th guy off the bench is not the quality it was 15 years ago.
That's
but
fair.
That's the sport. I don't see a team, even with how good Houston is this year, even with how good some of those top flight, you know, Purdue, those teams are. I don't think they're deep enough where, oh man, when Houston makes a line change like Kentucky used to do with Devin Booker, they're still the best team in the country. That doesn't happen anymore.
And I think at least for me, just at least for me, I am maybe just, and maybe KU fans are in this exact same boat, adjusting how I feel about Kansas and what my expectations are. Because I went back just 15 years. I just randomly threw out 2010. I'm looking at their roster. Rob, that team had six guys that played in the NBA. So Marcus and Markieff, Tyshawn Taylor, who played in the league for a while. Now, Josh Selby ended up getting a very, very small cut. But, like, I mean, we're talking about, like, Josh Selby at that year was your third, fourth best player, and he's a freshman. That was Thomas Robinson's senior year, and that was also Jeff Withey's year. And that's not even counting Tyrell Reed was a senior, Brady Morningstar was a senior. So your role players, I mean, Travis Relaford, like guys that you could depend on. Kansas is legitimately, 15 years ago, eight deep. You could start five NBA players, and then you've got really, really good complementary depth pieces behind them. That's not what I see at Kansas anymore. They got one incredible prospect. They got one guy who Bryson Tiller will probably need to stay in school another year or two. I just don't see him as a one and done. That's perfectly fine. And those are the players that KU used to do an exceptionally job with. Hey, this guy is the 23rd overall recruit. He's not a one and done, but you come here, we'll get your game ready, and now you can make good money playing basketball at Kansas and develop for the NBA. But this KU team, like, they are legitimately seven deep. Like, I don't see really anything else outside of the seven guys that you think that you feel really, really good about. It's going to be a lot of nights in which you're going to need Darren to be really, really special is what I'm seeing.
100%. It was funny. I was texting a friend of mine during the game on Friday night, and he texted me. He goes, the KU plan this year is an NBA player go be special and surround him with shooters. Yes, that is KU's literal plan, which on paper sounds good. And you're right. After the first game, I guess the second game, the first real game, no offense to Green Bay, the first real game, the role player pieces did not gel. But I'm going to give it more time than a two-game sample size, because I do think on paper what KU's game plan was in the portal and in recruiting is we got a transcendent talent in Darren Peterson, who, by the way, I don't think he even played well. Had like 22. He was really
Just crazy to say that he didn't play well when he had 22 as a freshman on the road.
I mean, you know? I didn't watch every dribble like I did. I didn't think he was great.
No, I'm just saying that shows you how good he is just as a freshman in his second game to go on the road at North Carolina, drop 22, and the expectation is, I mean, he played all right. He wasn't that great. But yes. I will say for KU, I mean, this KU, I mean, you got Princeton coming up on Saturday. Now, they're going to win that game, but you agree. Princeton is a good non-con team to play.
That's a 14 seed in the NCAA tournament.
Princeton is a good non-con team to play. They play Duke, Notre Dame, Cuse, UConn, Mizzou at NC State. I mean, this is really their last gimme game that they have coming up tomorrow against Texas A&M Corpus Christi. After that, they're playing Power Four. So I think we can agree, and this is not me throwing any shade, this ain't going to be a super smooth first 8-10 games for KU. They might end up being 5-3 at the end of this thing. But the hope is once you get past this stretch and then you start and then the schedule starts to lighten up and then you get into Big 12 play, you're going to feel like you're tournament tested where you played either tough environments or you played tough teams. I mean, who's the worst team they played during this stretch? Is it Notre Dame? Is that the worst team they play? And you play them in a neutral site in Vegas where anything could potentially happen in that scenario. So it is going to be a very, very interesting first 10 games for Kansas. They just, the way they scheduled this year, they don't have a whole lot of gimmies early on in this season. They got one tomorrow, and they play a string of eight consecutive Power Four schools. Keep it right here. It's The Drive on 96.5 The Fan.
This is Wyatt Thompson from K-State, and you're listening to The Drive with CDOT right here on 96.5 The Fan and the Odyssey app.
Brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got the...
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. and C's apply. In-app only.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, a board-certified OBGYN and menopause specialist. My new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it really takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Every week, I sit down with medical experts, cultural icons, and powerhouse women to talk about what really matters, your health, your power, and your future. We're covering hormones, identity, finances, relationships, and so much more. New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Unpaused with me, Dr. Mary Claire Haver, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
This. I understand that we are talking about something a little bit different, but I think you'll follow this. On a serious note, I'm used to Kansas basketball being in a position where they can run laps around everybody else. I mean, we have seen some Kansas basketball teams that have played in a very, very deep and talented basketball conference where it was not close between Kansas and the second best team in the Big 12. And this was basically the case for 15 years. I mean, there were times where we would argue that KU's second team could finish in fourth or fifth place in the Big 12 because that's how much talent they had. Now, I understand why things changed and how. And I use that as an example. As I'm watching the NFL yesterday and taking a closer look at the AFC, I'm not saying that the Chiefs can't win the AFC. I'm not saying that the Chiefs can't be the one seed and get hot and go on a run or go on the road and beat the Broncos. But I do think we can say, at least right now, man, the Chiefs don't really feel very different from any of these other teams. KU doesn't really feel any different than a lot of these other teams. Great coach, some individual talent, but it feels like Kansas is just kind of in the mix with these other teams. I think if we're being clear about the Chiefs, I think they're one of the teams that's just in the mix. Now, someone's going to get hot. That always happens. And that team could very easily be the Chiefs. But we are used to the Chiefs. They're the team that sets the tone at 8-2, 9-1. And you feel like there is a pretty big gap between the Chiefs and whomever you think are the second best team. Because as good as Buffalo has been these last couple of years, there's been a pretty decent sized gap between the Chiefs and the Bills and the games and situations that matter. How good the Ravens have been, whatever team that you want to say. But as we are now halfway through, I mean, we've seen 10 Colts games, 10 Broncos games, 10 Patriots games. We've got a pretty good feel for these teams. We're more than halfway through with the NFL season when it comes to some of these teams. There doesn't feel like there is any separation from the Chiefs and all these other teams. And I would even take it a step further. I don't know right now if you could put the Chiefs on tier one. Not based on what they have done. If you're putting them on that tier because to be the king, you got to beat the king, and based on their track record and what they've done last year, I'm not going to fight you there. But if we are talking about what you have done in the 2025-2026 NFL season, I think you'd be crazy to have the Chiefs as a tier one team right now. They haven't proven that on the field. They'll get the opportunity these next couple of weeks against the Colts and the Broncos to prove they're that team. But based on what they've done so far, the Chiefs cannot sit in that tier that we talk about all the time in the National Football League. They can't right now.
I love this comparison between Kansas basketball and the Chiefs. And to further it, I'll kind of say with the Chiefs, the same thing I said about KU a little bit ago. With KU, it feels like there's no truly great, oh my God, there's so much talent coming out of their ears team. I think there are teams that are better than KU, but I don't think there's ever a team where you're like, oh man, they just have so much more talent. That's about the Chiefs. Yes, they are not tier one right now. You can't put them on tier one. Unless you're like a, you know, dyed-in-the-wool Chiefs fan who sees everything through red and yellow glasses, maybe. But the Chiefs have not done anything on the field this year to really, really earn tier one status. But at the same time, it's not like anyone on tier one, I think, is just massively more talented than the Chiefs. Like, if the Chiefs and pick a team on tier one, the Patriots, played on a neutral site tomorrow, I don't know the Chiefs would win that game. I mean, I think it'd be a good game, but I don't think it's because the Patriots are just so much more supremely talented than them. I saw the Chiefs and Eagles play this year. Now the Chiefs didn't have Rashee Rice. You probably have the Eagles on tier one. I don't think the Eagles are just way more talented than the Chiefs on tier one. I think the Chiefs are objectively not on tier one, but I also don't think their talent is that far behind. The gap is pretty thin between them and wherever you have someone on tier one.
And to continue this analogy, and I think you'll follow it here, I think you'll agree here, I would be surprised if KU ends up as a one or a two seed. And that was a foregone conclusion for about 15 years. Kansas was going to win their league. They were going to dominate their non-con, and they were going to be in a position where they are potentially the number one overall seed where you get to dictate where you go. Well, if you're telling me that the Elite Eight's at Sprint Center, well, we know KU's going to be there. Where their path was Omaha, Kansas City, or Wichita. You get the point that I'm making. If the Chiefs lose this game, for the first time ever, we are going to talk about the Chiefs like a team that needs to get hot and get right in the second half of the season, and you don't want to play them. That's how you usually talk about the 5 seed in the NCAA tournament. That's how you talk about the 6 seed in the NCAA tournament. Well, you know, if we get the right matchup, that's how we talk about that team. You got talent. You're the 4th or the 5th seed. You got a tough 12 seed. But if the bracket breaks your way, then you can find yourself in the Final Four. That team pops up every single year. If the Chiefs are 5-5 heading into week 11, if they lose this game and they are a 500 team and we are about 2/3 done with the season, that's how we're going to talk about them. Can you get hot? Can you get right? Can you sneak into the playoffs and be the 6th seed and then be the team that nobody wants to play once the bracket comes out? We have never talked about the Chiefs like that team. We didn't start talking about KU as this team until 18 months ago. It'd be crazy to suggest this. They've always been considered one of the favorites. If the Chiefs lose this game on Sunday, you cannot consider them one of the favorites anymore, not when there are teams that are 9-2 and the Chiefs are sitting there at 500.
If the Chiefs lose on Sunday, and we're going to have a lot of time to talk about this game between now and Sunday, and I don't know the Chiefs are going to lose, but if they lose, people are going to look at them the way they look at that Packers team that won the Super Bowl, and they were the one Aaron Rodgers won. You'll remember, the Packers had to go on the road every single postseason game that year. Aaron Rodgers went on the road, played the Eagles. Now, that wasn't, you know, the Eagles. It was a good Eagles team, but not great. They went on the road, played an upstart Falcons team. They went on the road, played a division rival against the Bears on the road. Aaron Rodgers and the Packers, people thought they were better than the 60 in the NFC, and they had to go on the road 3 times in the Super Bowl. They did it. Congratulations to them. It was, you know, 15 years ago at this point. But that will be how the Chiefs are talked about. Hey, it's really difficult to go on the road 3 times, but we've seen an elite quarterback do it once with Aaron Rodgers. Maybe we'll see it again with Patrick Mahomes. That is going to be the conversation. The same way, you know, college basketball fans, when their team is that 5-6 seed, well, you know, if things break right, we could end up in the Elite Eight. That will be the Chiefs conversation. Well, they're a spicy 6 seed, and you don't want to face them, but 3 road games is a very daunting task. That will be the pivot in conversation after 1 loss.
Yeah, and, I mean, if the Chiefs win, so on the other side, like, they win this game, then it is the king stay the king, right? You win this game, you're 6-4, you've got the Colts at home, you then got a game against the Cowboys. I would say you come out on the other side and you feel really, really good about the Chiefs. And then it's about them getting their swagger back, you dominating December, taking care of the AFC West, and you can find yourself right there. To the point that you just made, because there isn't a great team, it also puts you in a really good spot where if you get back, get healthy, and get right, and you're a 12-5 team going into the postseason, I don't really care if Denver has a better record than you or if the Colts have a better record than you. The perception is going to be that you are the better team because of your championship-level experience. That is going to be the feeling if that's how things turn out. I don't care what the Colts do. If the Chiefs are a 12-5 team, and let's say the Colts go 14-3, for example, the Chiefs will be favored in the AFC Championship game regardless of where that game is played. They're the Chiefs, and you're the Colts. That is how the feeling would be. So that's why, looking at this, the Chiefs are at a crossroad in their season. That's really, really where they are. We know what one path looks like. One path is continuing what we've been doing. That's what it is. Continue what we've been doing. For the most part, for the last 5 to 6 years, sure, there have been pockets of panic, but there has always been a, you got 15, you got Mahomes, we always figure it out. So I don't care if you get down by 10 in the Super Bowl or this thing happens, we always figure it out. So I would say things just stay the same if they win this game. And that's a great thing. Everybody has enjoyed the way that it's been. If they lose this game, there will be some incredibly nervous times. And for the first time in the Mahomes era, we will have a conversation about what if they don't make the playoffs. We have never entertained that. It has been laughable to have that. You can't talk about the Chiefs properly if you don't have that conversation if they lose this game next week at 5-5 in week 11, especially with how the rest of the AFC looks. You're going to be behind a lot of teams and really, really need to do some work if that's the case. And you guys are talking about tiebreakers you don't have. You don't have the tiebreaker against Jacksonville. Right now, you don't have the tiebreaker against the Chargers. They have two wins up on you. Like, there's going to be some math and things that come into play if they lose. That's what I'm saying. Like, we know what's behind both doors. One door, it just maintains the status quo that we all have enjoyed. The other side is a place that we have not been at any point since Patrick Mahomes has taken over as the starting quarterback of the Kansas City Chiefs. Rob, there was a lot of college football this weekend. Speaking of Patrick Mahomes, his alma mater, I think they've clinched the Big 12. We'll talk about it. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison, a show that prides itself on getting it right.
I don't know what I'm talking about.
Brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this. 96.5, The Fan.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
I want to go back. Oh my goodness, almost fell out of the chair. Rob, I scooted up in the chair, and the chair started scooting back. I'm like, oh boy, I was about to be on the video too, falling. I got fearful. I saw my life flash before my eyes. I'm not going viral for that. Radio host falls out of chair mid-segment. No, I didn't. I had to catch myself. I'm sorry. For those of you on YouTube, you saw it. I almost fell. I almost hurt myself. All right, let me play this for you. This is Gus Johnson. Gus Johnson, he almost hurt himself.
Mendoza in trouble. It's out. Control.
Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. It's a touchdown.
Oh my gosh.
I went on FanDuel and I was just curious. I really was. I was curious. I couldn't believe that Fernando Mendoza wasn't the favorite to win the Heisman Trophy. Rob, when is this Julian Sayin conversation started? Now, I'm not saying he's not having a great season. He is having a fantastic season, but it kind of feels to me like Ohio State's kind of been out of sight, out of mind. Have they had a big game since that first game of the season? Like, they had the first game of the season against Texas. We had that circle, wanted to see Arch Horseshoe, defending national champion. Since then, I mean, I just feel like they've just been good. They've been Ohio State, but they haven't. Have they had a moment? Can you think of a Julian Sayin play this year? I'm surprised right now that he is the favorite to win the Heisman when Ty Simpson has made some big time plays. That throw that he made against Missouri on fourth down, that is a Heisman go get it on the road play. Fernando Mendoza, I would say that he just had the moment of the college football season. Indiana is down 24-20. With a minute 51 left on the road. Now, I know Penn State did not turn out to be the team that we thought they were going to be, but you're down on the road, conference game, and there's 90,000 people that want to see you fail. They went down the field 10 plays, 80 yards in a minute 30, and he throws a game-winning touchdown pass. How is that person not the favorite to win the Heisman Trophy? If I had a vote, I got to figure out a way to get a vote. We got to figure out a way to get a show collective Heisman Trophy vote. I would have Fernando Mendoza one, Ty Simpson two. I don't even know if I would have Julian Sand to be third on my list, if I'm being completely honest with you. I really think he's just been kind of out of sight, out of mind. I don't think he has a lot of big plays or moments so far this season.
I totally agree with you. We get these emails from Bet Online and all these, you know, gambling services. They're like, oh, here are the updated, you know, odds for this and odds for that. And I read the thing. Julian Sand remains a slight favorite, and I didn't understand the why. Like, he's plus 150 to win the Heisman? What has he done this season? Like, I get that they're Ohio State, they're undefeated, and they might be the best team in the country. I kind of think they're largely untested, but they might be the best team in the country. Good for Ohio State. But nothing about his game this year has been like, oh, man, Julian Sand. Like, I think Mendoza's been better. I think Simpson's been better. I think the kid at A&M, Marcel Reed.
Yep.
I'm not saying he should win the Heisman. I would have him ahead of Sand. I know that Diego Pavia is kind of now falling outside, out of mind. Diego,
I feel like Pavia should be invited.
He should be invited. He's had more moments this year than Julian Sand. And I know that you want to change the MVP. If you want to change the MVP, let's change the Heisman. Jeremiah Love having another incredible season at Notre Dame. Like, no disrespect to Julian Sand, but he is not a Heisman contender. He's going to be draft pick one day. He is the quarterback of the best team in college football. Like, there are good things about Julian Sand. He's not a Heisman guy at this point.
Yeah, I was very, very surprised to see that his name was number one leading the Heisman Trophy, and I wouldn't vote for him right now if I had a vote. Let's continue the college football conversation. I think the Big 12 is over. Do you think it's over? Texas Tech is the best team in the Big 12. I think it is clear, hands down, that is the case. They've already beaten Utah earlier this season, and they've beaten BYU. Texas Tech is the best team in the Big 12, and they should represent the Big 12 once we get to the college football playoff.
I 100% agree with you. I was telling you last week, I was screaming for anyone to hear.
You did.
Head to FanDuel, take Tech minus the number. They're going to thump BYU, and they did. Here's my question. I agree with you. Texas Tech's the best team in the Big 12. Go ahead and put them in, write them down, and pin for Arlington. If they go the Big 12 title game and they somehow get upset, Utah gets them, or BYU, they have a bad turnover game, whatever, and they're a two-loss team that doesn't win the league, what do you do with them? Because I think Tech's a playoff team no matter what at this point, unless they lose in the regular season. But
I think, yeah, I'm with you. Texas Tech has proven that they're one of the 12 best teams in college. But I guess I would
punished?
Argue.
Are they going to get punished for being the Big 12, which is not considered the premier conference in college football? Like,
I mean,
I don't know how this is going to work if the playoff gets closer.
I mean, isn't there a precedent for this already? I mean, didn't last year, didn't this exact same thing happen? We saw Clemson lose in the ACC, or SMU lost in the championship game, and SMU still made the college football playoff. So if the argument is going to be that last year SMU was a college football playoff team, I don't know why Texas Tech in this scenario, especially when the ACC is not getting multiple teams. They're getting one team, and they should be lucky that they're getting the one. I mean, Virginia was ranked in the top 15. Virginia got beat 16-9 by Wake Forest at the crib. The fact that that team can make the college football playoff, that we could be in November and you could lose a home game to Wake Forest and you still got a shot to go to the college football playoff, is sick to me. And then Louisville, another good team. Louisville, you got beat at home by Cal. You telling me they flew all that way to come over there, give the beats, and they flew all that way back. The ACC is bad this year. Miami isn't the team we thought they were going to be. Florida State got out to the hot start. They have now fizzled out the rest of the way. So if the ACC is only going to get one team, that opens the Big 12 up to get, whether it's Tech, and that's the only team that they get, or if Tech gets upset and let's say BYU beats them, I would then say the Texas Tech deserves to be one of the 12 teams to go to the college football playoff.
I think Tech talent-wise is 100% in. They might have the second-best defense in the country. Like that, they bought it. It's paid for. Good for them, but it's crazy good. It is a scenario as a Big 12 fan I wonder about. If, you know, they get tripped up in the title game, not in the regular season. They lose in the regular season, a different conversation. Like if they lose to, I don't know who they have left in their schedule, but if they lose like Oklahoma State, okay, obviously different conversation. But if they lose in Arlington to Utah, and now Utah's in and they're out, what are we doing? Like, and if Notre Dame makes it in over Texas Tech, as if they get to two losses, I'm going to, as a Big 12 fan, be really mad on that day.
Yeah, I also just think, I mean, I think we're getting pretty close to a scenario in which some of these conferences are just not going to play in the championship game because it ends up hurting them for the reasons that you meant. That if we just stopped it at the end of the regular season, Texas Tech would be in. It's not like Texas Tech can just say we're not going to show up for the Big 12 championship. I think that's going to be the argument that the committee really starts to follow going forward, whether playing in your conference championship game should be able to hurt you and then move you out of the playoff, where a team that wasn't in their conference championship game is then able to leap past you because you had a better season than them. So I think that's always something that you're going to run the risk of. Coming up at the top of the hour, we're going to be joined by Jason Dunn. You guys remember him, Jason Dunn. He is the co-host of the Chiefs Concerns podcast. We're going to get his thoughts about the Chiefs. They are coming off the bye week. That's coming up. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.